I had a wonderful time in Canada this last weekend up at the Canadian Outdoor Horse Expo in in Ontario. And it's just always such a joy to attend the event. It's my third year at the event, and I just really enjoy it. It looks like we're going to be doing a clinic up there probably early September, and we've had quite a few people express interest. It looks like it's going to work out in the schedule this year, so I'm looking forward to going back.
Of course, we'll notify everyone by email when that clinic gets scheduled.
Yeah. Email and Facebook. I'm getting better at Facebook.
And lately we've had several people decide to fly in for clinics.
Yeah, that's something to think about. You know, my schedule is pretty light this year, just working on other projects. But, people aren't waiting for a clinic to come into the area anymore. They're flying into places and either arranging for a horse or observing over the weekend. So that's certainly an option, you know, something to keep in mind. I'm doing a clinic here the weekend after this in 2 weekends up in Denver area. And it's really a beautiful area. I've been to the facility several times, and really nice folks. We always have a really great time. So, you know, it's always something to think about.
Okay, we'd like to welcome everyone to Karen's teleseminar this evening. We've got 5 questions. The topics are getting a faster walk, vicious pony, nervous in the stall, resistant around the farm, and good start for a beginning rider. So if you're ready, we'll go with the first question here, Karen.
Okay, go ahead.
Getting a faster walk. Hi, I have a wonderful, well-behaved 7-year-old pink gelding. How do I know my horse's normal walking pace should be? He's 16 hands and very calm, but walks at a slow pace when I go out on the trail. I trail ride with friends, but their horses walk at a much faster pace than mine, and I have to constantly catch up. I've tried working him in the arena, pushing him repetitively with my legs. I've carried a crop to tap on his rear, and have even given little bursts with my spurs, but to no avail. This horse, on the other hand, when asked to trot or lope, has no problem responding with speed or power. If I'm making an error in letting him walk at a slow speed, please tell me what I need to do to speed him up. Or, on the other hand, do I just let him be and enjoy it? I just wish he would speed up a little bit. I appreciate your advice, Patty.
Okay. That's a really great question, and you see it all the time. I was actually going through a mailing I got on a horse sale from a group of working cowboys, and the sale's up in Utah, you know, here in a few weeks. And one of the comments that's really valued in working horses, which means horses that go out and work on cattle ranches, is, you know, they have to cover a lot of ground. And having a nice, fast walk is a really valued quality in a lot of these horses. So you'll see the comments in there. You know, when the horse has a really nice, he'll walk out, you know, is a common term, which means basically you can just give a loose rein in that horse, and everybody's seen it. They'll drop their head, and they'll just kind of get a nice rhythm and a swing. They use their neck and their shoulder, and they just, you know, can really kind of motor along. And it is nice. You know, horses that I have that have a really nice walk, and you keep up with everybody, and you don't, you know, there's no effort on your part. Bergante and debutante are two examples of kind of those opposites in their nature. So debutante, when I ride him out to gather cattle, I go on a big, you know, loop or something with somebody, and I can just go along and not even think about it. He's got a nice, big, kind of a swinging, natural stride to him, and he just gets in a rhythm and, you know, off we go. On the other hand, Bergante just has a different physiology. He has a more up and down movement than both Beat Me and Illusions. You know, he just has this physiology where he kind of, everything kind of lifts up. You know, he has higher knee action, that kind of a thing. So his legs don't quite move like Deb, with kind of that nice swinging pendulum kind of movement. So that's their nature, okay? So looking at a horse's nature is one thing, and then shaping behavior beyond it, you know, is another, because I use Bergante as much, you know, as I do Deb. So when I use Berg and I need him to walk up and keep up, sometimes it's something where, you know, you don't want to lag behind and then trot up and catch up with everybody, and then it lags behind and then you trot up and catch up with everybody again. That's a really common pattern to get into. So when I ride Berg, I'm much more, I don't want to say more attentive, because I'm certainly attentive with Deb as well, but that aspect to his nature is something that I'm always having a little bit of an exchange with him. So something that you can do that, you know, really helps Berg out, and Deb also, is I like to think of three gates within a gate. So everybody thinks of gates as walk, trot, canter, gallop. Okay, and then gated horses have additional ones in between. But if you think it takes a walk in this example, and I want to find a slow, a medium, and a fast walk, okay? And it's important to have that as well. You know, with Deb, when I get into a small area, or I'm, you know, helping a horse horseback using him, or in a branding pen or something like that, I have to kind of shorten up and get kind of the precision movement. You know, maybe it's just a half a step forwards in order to, you know, turn a cow or, you know, change positions, something like that. So Deb, I have to shorten up, and Berg, I have to lengthen, okay, depending on the situation I'm in. So if you make it as just a little exercise and say, you know, and I've done this in clinics with people, is we'll have a slow walking race. You get disqualified if you stop, but the slowest one to walk across the arena wins the race, okay? So that's your slow walk. You kind of have that picture in your mind. Then there's your medium walk, which is just kind of average, not too fast, not too slow, okay? And then there's a fast walk. One of the things that people don't always think about is the person on the fast walking horse can bring their horse back and ask them for a medium walk as well. You know, people don't always think that. We get on a trail ride and we just think, you know, cover the ground, you know, go on the miles, you know, and so the trail ride is usually led by the fastest, you know, walking horse. And it's interesting because what we're looking for always is balance. We're looking for the, you know, horses that walk slower by nature to kind of pick up and find their fast walk. And then we're also looking for the fast walking horses to rate themselves, R-A-T-E, to rate themselves and to back off and move with the herd. All horses have this ability because in a wild herd, they move as a unit, okay? So something I like to do on trail rides is take the slow walking horses just by nature and put them in the front. And then take the faster walking horses and put them at the back. And what's really interesting is, you know, and no passing. You know, everybody kind of, you know, stays in that, you know, that order. And what's really interesting is that it evens up the group. The horses that are behind that are used to just, you know, kind of dogging along and then trotting to catch up, all of a sudden those horses are kind of in the responsibility to set the pace. And what's really interesting is when they get a, you know, horse that's kind of bunching up behind them, all of a sudden, kind of that incentive starts to pick up. That energy kind of helps them pick up. Otherwise, you can sit there. You know, I've seen people get in this habit where I call it pedaling the horse. You know, you're asking that horse with your legs and your seat, and you've already described, you know, using spurs and this kind of thing. You're pedaling the horse and pedaling the horse and pedaling the horse. So in the big picture, think about riding with balance. Go out and develop your communication for a slow, medium, fast walk before you even get on the trail ride. When you go to the trail, you know, rearrange the horses. Kind of do the opposite of what, you know, most groups want to do. Now, if you're in a large group and you can't, that's not feasible. You can't organize everybody and everybody isn't, you know, wanting to, you know, kind of do a little project with you, just do it on a small project. You know, call a couple of friends and say, you know, hey, I want to do something with my horse and kind of fill around and, you know, just ask somebody to go out and go on a trail ride with the purpose of, you know, having this little project to do. So, you know, it doesn't mean you show up and say, well, you know, Karen Scholl told me that, you know, this is how the trail ride should go, okay? So, you know, just set it up. You know, set it up to develop that skill with your horse. And ultimately, in all of these things, what you want to remember, as with anything you ask with your horse, is the release of pressure that teaches. So with Bergante, when I first started, you know, doing some things to lengthen him, and I needed to lengthen him at all of his gates because he'd been so collected, everything was about, you know, collection and quiet and this kind of thing, and I needed to really be able to open him up, you know, as well and lengthen him. So it's almost easier in a trot and a canter. And the walk sometimes, if this makes you feel any better, is a lot of times one of the most challenging gates to lengthen because the momentum isn't there, the energy isn't there. So bringing your energy up, you getting in kind of a rhythm a little bit ahead of his, and take him up just to where he wants to trot, and then just ask him not to trot. And he may break into a trot a few times. And every time he's in that little spot, you know, of the slow, medium, fast walk, when he's in that little spot, that gate within a gate, release that pressure, which means don't put any pressure with your seat or your legs or anything. Just allow him to find that his happiness is in this particular speed within the gate. And it doesn't take long for the horses, especially it sounds like a horse like this, who's really, you know, even tempered, nice natured, all those kind of things. That horse in particular, that type becomes really, there's a high incentive for comfort. And so when that horse starts getting the game, I'm going to leave you alone when you find this tempo. And when you're in that tempo matching my tempo and my rhythm of my energy and my body, okay, because riding, it's called riding, not sitting. And a lot of times we don't know that and we don't really know what that means and we end up kind of just sitting on the horse. And then we get frustrated because the horse is walking slow and the horse is going, well, you're not doing anything either. So remember that. You know, riding a horse is an interactive process. We're holding a conversation. So when I'm riding horses, I am always giving that horse feedback. And it's interesting because of Brigante's nature, I'll catch it sometimes where all of a sudden, you know, I don't want to say he's dogging it, but he's kind of, you know, he's not lazy, he's efficient. and he tends to go kind of back to his kind of tempo, his natural tempo, which is, you know, natural. I mean, you think about it. There are high energy people who tend to, you know, gravitate towards high energy activities and things, and, you know, it's just coming out of them all the time. And then there's low energy, you know, people who have, you know, just kind of a natural, relaxed, even keel kind of a thing. So, you know, he's going to gravitate towards that natural tempo, but depending on what I'm doing, I just respond to that. So here's the thing to have in mind. And with the demo horses that I had up in Canada this weekend, one of the things I like to emphasize, you know, I have a variety of horses. I've never met any of them before. I'm just interacting with them. And what's really interesting is people think somehow I'm training the horse, and yet the horse knows how to do everything. Like, your horse knows how to walk fast. If there's a reason for that horse to walk fast, I guarantee you he's fully capable in his physiology, you know, to do that. We just don't know to ask it, and then once the horse does it, somehow we get in our mind that, okay, well, now he's doing it, and I won't ever have to ask that again. And so what I try to emphasize to people is that the horse is going to have patterns of behavior based on, you know, nature and learned behavior, but it's going to be our response to that. That says, hey, right now I need you in a faster tempo. My energy and my body is communicating that, and it's your responsibility to match that. If you don't match that, I'm going to squeeze with my legs, you know, pick them up with my lower legs and not kick. Kicking does not speed up a horse. You never see a jockey kick a horse for speed or use spurs. Spurs are misunderstood for forward, okay? Spurs are for lateral movement. We're picking up a horse. It's your seat and your legs, okay, and rhythmic pressure in the hindquarters. That's a whole different discussion. But once that horse makes any motion to go forwards, don't release the pressure to where you're a bump on a log again. Just go back to where your rhythm in your body and your energy matches the tempo that you're looking for. That's the release of the pressure that I'm describing. So it's kind of a lot of things, you know, but if I give you that concept and that idea of what you're looking to do, then you can kind of go out there and keep fiddling around until you find it. And you'll find it for just a moment, and then the horse is going to go, okay, but, you know, that's too much like work. Why don't we just do the plod along and trot up and plod along and trot up thing? You know, that's just a pattern of behavior. So always remember that you're, in order to change a pattern of behavior, you're overlaying the old pattern with a new pattern until that just becomes second nature, not only for the horse but for you as well. So hopefully that will help you find the tempo, if you can just think of that tempo and helping your horse find, you know, kind of make it a game with him to, hey, when you find that tempo, that's where the most comfortable, I'm going to make that as comfortable as I can for you. That's where your comfort is, okay? When they change tempo, either speed up or slow down, the comfort goes away. When they get back into that rhythm and that tempo, that's where you release that pressure and leave it alone. So that's what you're dealing with. It's the nature of the horse, but then it's how do you shape the behavior. Understanding the nature of the horse and then shaping the behavior is we'll learn behavior beyond that. So good luck with that, and you know, be sure to let me know how that goes, because it's a great feeling. You know, it's something that I don't even think about with Bergante anymore. It was something that, you know, was a project, and like I described, just became second nature to myself and him. It kind of had to remind me. It was like, oh yeah, I used to do that with Berg all the time, and now he just knows when I'm in a certain tempo, he knows that his comfort is there, and he just kind of, he goes there for me. But, you know, it didn't happen overnight. You know, it's something that, and even occasionally I'll kind of realize, like, you know, I'm getting, it's very subtle, and all of a sudden I realize I'm kind of peddling him, and I'm like, wait, snap myself out of it. And go, you know, hey, dude, here's your comfort. Get back into it. So let me know how it goes for you.
Well, thanks for that answer, Karen. I think Patty's going to want to go back and listen to this answer over and over and over, because there were so many good points and ideas that you had in there. That it's going to be impossible to hear them all the first time through, I think.
Yeah, it's, you know, it seems like such a simple question, and, you know, it's kind of like, you know, everything, there's so many aspects to it, so many subtleties to it. You know, it seems like a simple thing, but, you know, it's really not. To find the lasting effect in shaping the behavior, it's not a simple answer. I wish it was, you know. So, how do you make the horse? Here's a question. How do you cause the horse to want to walk fast and hold the gate without you having to pedal him along? That's the ultimate question. How do you get the horse to want to do that? Yeah.
Yeah, that's the game.
Mm-hmm.
All right, we've got another interesting question here about a vicious pony that Judy really wants some help with.
Okay.
I have a 12-hand, 8-year-old Welsh gelding. He has some good training, but he's difficult to catch until you call his name, then he will turn and come straight at you. When riding him, if you say, whoa, he stops without any rein pressure. He lunges like a dream and is lovely with people and children, but he is vicious with other horses. Once things seemed settled in the paddock with my two other small ponies, I thought we were okay. Then, for no reason, he chased our lovely-natured Shetland like a cougar taking down a deer and tried to bite his legs to take him down. I now keep my gelding in a separate paddock next to the small ponies, and he constantly calls to them. In another connected paddock, I have two 14-hand ponies and a Percheron thoroughbred cross. He tries to fight with them. He squeals, strikes the fence, and bites. I do think about putting him in with them to learn a lesson, but I'm concerned that somebody would be hurt. I've been wondering if a shock collar might be something I should consider. Please help, Judy.
Hmm. Boy, that's kind of a tough one, and I hesitate to give you an answer on a telephone call. it's because it's serious. I mean, that's, you know, serious behavior. Probably the first thing I would check out is I would have a veterinarian check and make sure that the pony was gelded fully. The behavior impresses me as stallion-like behavior. Geldings will play what I call the gelding game, where they will go down on their knees. They'll be biting at the inside of the legs of the other, and they'll take them, you know, down to their knees, that kind of thing. So it's very difficult to see sometimes to identify whether it's play or whether it's aggression. And it's a fine line. You know, it's a fine line. So, you know, you see this, you know, with dogs as well. What's, you know, appears to be aggression sometimes is their style of play, depending on the individual. So the first thing I would do is have that ruled out. I've had situations where, you know, I've had geldings, you know, fight through the fence. They just take a dislike to another individual. And I'm kind of curious, you know, I heard about the nice natured Shetland pony, but I didn't hear about if it's all horses or not. So if it's all horses, to me, that kind of gets a red flag. They can test and make sure that the horse was not cryptorchid, which means one of the testicles did not descend and geld. So that horse is actually still engaged in stallion-like behavior because there's still testosterone in the system. They can also be what's called proud cut, which means they did not get all of the tissue that produces, that would also cause testosterone to continue to be manufactured. So, you know, horses that are under the influence of testosterone, you know, it sounds like he's really nicely trained and comes right to you and all those kinds of things. Those kind of patterns of behavior towards humans may be conditioned so much that you're not seeing stallion-like behavior. And it doesn't necessarily even mean with mares. I just think it'd be a good thing to check out and rule out, because it's not very often that you see geldings become, you know, truly aggressive. Now, geldings do play rough. You know, you go to a public swimming pool and there's a big sign that says no horseplay. I mean, it's rough play sometimes. Sometimes it's appropriate, you know, to separate certain individuals. Another thing I'll share with you, I had a gelding years ago that when we lived in Colorado in the wintertime, we put our horses out on winter pasture. And we put them out into a herd of about 80 horses. And our horses were all, you know, in a unit, familiar with each other. And we put them out with this group of horses, and we watched the horses all integrate. You know, we were just observing from a distance how that all went. There was one particular, one gelding of ours that was pushed out from the herd. All the horses, there were certain horses in the herd that kept driving him out and driving him out and driving him out. I'm just giving you this. I don't know if it's related to this situation, but he was actually pushed out of the herd and never allowed to come into the boundaries of the herd. And whenever we went out and checked on the horses every couple of days through the wintertime, all the horses were in a herd, whatever part of this, you know, is, I don't know, a couple hundred acres they were in, he was by himself in another place. He did not live through that winter. There wasn't any reason. You know, he was an old horse. But I almost wonder if the horses sensed that there was something wrong with him and therefore preventing him from, you know, being integrated into the herd. So, you know, that was something that was really interesting, and I can only speculate about horse behavior. But nature's, you know, highly intelligent, as we all know. So I'm just giving you that as a possibility if there may be something that horse is picking up on in a particular individual that they, you know, are just relentless in driving them off. And depending on how large the area is, you know, they just may not be able to drive them off suitably. This herd of horses did not quit until my horse was at least a quarter of a mile away. They would chase him out until he was pretty far away from the herd, and then they'd go back into the herd. And then he'd try to come back in, and they would drive him out again. It was really an interesting, you know, dynamic that we observed, and you know, for no reason that we could tell, you know, but obviously, you know, there turned out to be something quite wrong. So, you know, that's something to consider as well. So I would check on those kinds of, I don't know, characteristics or tendencies, you know, those kinds of things. Excuse me. Make sure also that the area that you have them turned out in is large enough for, you know, a horse that maybe may require more territory. You know, I've known horses that in a large area, they're very comfortable, they're very relaxed. They get into smaller and smaller areas and they become defensive about, you know, their kind of territories. Make sure that your fencing is solid and that a horse cannot go inside of a pen, and this goes for anybody, not even in this situation, but just in general. Try to make sure that anything that would become a trap is closed off, that a horse cannot run another horse into, say, an open stall or a corner of some kind. You don't want the horse lower in the leadership ladder to be able to, you know, ever be trapped in a corner and not be able to get out. Horses, I've had horses myself and I've observed other horses that will absolutely just jump out sideways or over a corner. If they feel trapped in a corner, they will jump over it rather than, you know, take a hit from, you know, whatever they feel is putting pressure on them. You know, you mentioned a shock collar, and they do make shock collars for horses. And to be honest, I just have not found a good enough reason, you know, to do that. If it were like your last resort, you ruled everything out, you know, a horse was either going to have to be sold or put down because of it. If it was like you've tried everything else, you know, that, you know, might be a possibility. I have not found in my personal experience that I haven't been able to change the environment or the situation in some way that I would get to a point of having to do that. Another aspect about it is when it's feeding time around horses. So, you know, my favorite way, my preferred way to feed horses is as natural as possible. I like to feed them just a low protein, just a grass hay, very low protein in round bales that they can graze on. And when they can just graze freely, a lot of times horses that are feel that they're competing for space or feed or other individuals, you know, some horses you'll see what appears to be aggressive behavior when they feel very attached to another individual and they're trying to keep the other horses away from them. Sometimes you'll see that behavior appear very aggressive as well. So that's why I hesitate to even answer this, you know, in a telephone conversation, because it's difficult for me. You know, I feel like a detective sometimes where I'm just looking for clues. You know, I'm looking for clues. But if you can have a large enough area with very safe fencing without anything, you know, angled any less than 90 degrees, you know, if you do have corners in your pen or paddock or something like that, just take a panel and you know, wire it or tie it solidly so it takes that corner out of there. That way, if a horse is being chased, it's much more difficult for it to get stuck into a corner and get, you know, really beat up. So my horses, you know, I have, you know, my small little herd, and there is definitely a lead horse and there is definitely a bottom horse. And I've had people that, you know, when I'm traveling a lot and, you know, they'll do things, they'll feel bad for the horse at the very bottom and they'll pull them out and do all kinds of things to make sure they get enough food. And, you know, even though the feed is spread out enough that, you know, all the horses, even if they go in and move the other horse off their feed, there's enough feeders out there that they'll just rotate around to another feeder. But, you know, I've had to go in and explain to people, you know, I really appreciate what they're doing, but, you know, my horses are a group. They're a family unit. They've been together for, you know, how many years, you know, 30 years, and, you know, with individuals, you know, coming and going occasionally, and they'll be together hopefully another, you know, 20, 30 years. So they do tend to work it out. Another thing to consider is if you have shoes on horses. My preference, and just for the personal use of my horses, this is another consideration, is my horses are all barefoot. They've been barefoot for years and years, you know, before it kind of became even, you know, the thing. You know, I had education. I took a 16-week farrier course back when I got my degree in equine science. you know, and just looked at the physiology and make the decisions, you know, for myself at the time with, you know, great advisors, you know, professionals, you know, in the industry. But that's another consideration. At least when you have horses in together, you know, ideally at least have the shoes off the back feet. You know, the back feet don't carry as much weight as the front feet. You know, in my opinion, you know, my horses don't need shoes at all. So that's a consideration as well. You know, my horses do take kicks, you know, from each other. And, you know, it's something to consider when they don't have shoes on. It's nothing like, you know, when a horse has metal on their feet and they take a hit. So, and something else to consider is, you know, kind of lastly, I've had people say, well, I'm not going to put my horses out together because I'm afraid they'll get hurt. And they can get hurt. You know, they can have a broken leg. You know, my horses without shoes know each other for years and years. You know, I could go out tomorrow and have a horse with a broken leg and have to put it down. I mean, that's just a fact of life. But in my opinion, in my situation, I'd rather have a happy horse that's out there socialized with his herd mates, and risk that rather than have a horse living in isolation for the rest of its life. So that's just my, you know, personal experience, my personal preference. But it's, you know, I'd just like to offer that for others, you know, to consider. So I know, you know, it's a perplexing thing. You know, it sounds like you want to turn the horses out and kind of, you know, let them sort it out amongst themselves, that kind of a thing. Just make sure it's an open enough area. There's enough, you know, land, there's enough space for them not to be too crowded in, you know, especially around feet. Sometimes, you know, especially, you know, when it's muddy and stuff like that, we tend to, you know, throw hay over the fence and maybe we can't spread it out as much as we want to. But usually feeding time is when you see the most assertive behavior between horses, but at the same time you'll see horses chase the other one down and, you know, get a hold of their teeth and these kind of things, and then, you know, in 5 minutes later they're eating out of the same hay pile again. So, you know, it's important to understand too that it is their dynamic of communication in their leadership, element of leadership. It sounds like you understand that already. It just sounds like this horse is kind of off the charts a little bit on that leadership aspect. So first check out the physiology aspect of it, you know, then make sure and make any changes to the environment, you know, that you can, and then just, you know, make those adjustments, you know, to it. I've not found a reason for a shock collar. The folks that developed it actually gave me one for use, and I took it around with me. I had it with me for almost 2 years and gave it back. And I just said, you know, I just haven't, in all the horses that I interact with every, you know, week and week in and week out, I just had not found a reason for it to come to that. So, you know, that's just my experience. It's just something for you to consider. But I would try those other things, you know, definitely before I would resort to something like that. So just give you, you know, food for thought. And again, like all the questions, all the great questions that I get, you know, let me know how those things work out. Let me know if there was something that you didn't notice before, or some change that you made. And, you know, sometimes horses, I'll give you another piece. There's probably about 10 more things I'll think about after I stop here. When horses don't get along, something that I really love to do is haul them to a strange place together. And there is a dynamic when horses, they just, you know, they're just like us. Sometimes we just don't get along with somebody. They just, you know, the person rubs us the wrong way or we rub them the wrong way. You know, there's chemistry, you know, and it's very, very real. So if you have two individuals that really have a dislike for each other, it's really fascinating. But you can put those two horses in a trailer, ideally overnight. But it doesn't need to be overnight. You can just go down to, you know, a fairgrounds. When you get into a strange environment and those two horses are the only ones that know each other, it's really amazing. They'll come back. I've seen it multiple times. The horses will come back, and they'll be buddies for life. They'll go, man, we were out there, you know, in that strange land, you know, and you were the one I could count on. So, you know, that's something that's a really interesting dynamic as well. If you have two individuals that just, for whatever reason, have a dislike for each other, you may want to, you know, give that a try, you know. There's so many things to think about when you're wanting, you know, animals to get along, the chemistry to get along. But those are some things I can think of, you know, in just this bit of time that we have here. And let me know how that goes for you.
Well, thanks for that answer, Karen. This is just a reminder to us that even though horses are a hobby, it's just really valuable for us to learn as much as we can about horse psychology and behavior just so that we can get along with our horse friends.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and that's kind of it. You know, we get into this and you think, oh, horses are easy. And then, you know, you just run into every kind of scenario, you know, you can imagine. And that's what's so wonderful is that we can share our experiences and share our ideas and concepts and possibilities, you know, and just give each other more to think about.
All right. Our next question is nervous in the stall.
Okay.
Hello, I have a mare who used to go in her stall for the night and be out in her paddock during the day. A year ago, she cut her face badly when she was in her stall and neighbors were doing fireworks when we were not home. She's gone in her stall to rest and sleep every night since the incident, but we have not closed her in. We will be attending a clinic in a couple of weeks and wonder what the best way will be to get her used to her stall when she will have to be in and not active during the clinic. Her paddock mate here at home will be with her in the next stall at the clinic, but I'm sure she will be antsy as she is here when we close them in. Her pasture mate isn't antsy, though sometimes he catches her nerves. What would be your suggestion to get her used to a closed stall and to get through the 2 days and nights at the clinic? I've thought of making the right thing easy and making her work outside the stall. Do you suggest that we close them in a couple of nights before we go to the clinic? As always, thank you, Pat.
Mm-hmm. Well, it sounds like you already know the answer. I mean, it's the same thing as with anything. It's having them become familiar with environments and situations and, you know, those kinds of things. So, you know, sometimes people will go along and say, well, you know, my horse doesn't like the stall and wants to be with the other horses. And, you know, we accommodate that. And, you know, that's kind of, you know, one way to go about it. The problem is that at some point, like in this scenario, you're going to need to have the horse in the stall, you know, closed in. So, you know, it's like getting a dog used to a kennel. You know, it's a little bit different because dogs by nature want to be in the kennel and horses by nature want to be outside, you know, even in a bad storm. So it's a little against the nature in that way. But, you know, a dog doesn't really want to be separated from the family. And yet, you know, you can have expectations of the dog and communicate those expectations, and the dog adapts, the dog adjusts. So a lot of times it's more about us getting our mind around it that the stall becomes the happy place. And the horse is not let out of the stall when it's anxious. The horse is only let out of the stall when it's relaxed. And that's a lot of times we don't really recognize, you know, what's going on. So say a horse is, you know, and there's lots of scenarios. The horse is in the horse trailer. The horse is tied to a hitching rail. The horse is in a stall, and they're anxious and want to be, you know, out with the other horses or in the pasture. They don't want to be where they're at. Or a puppy's crying in its kennel. So if the puppy's crying in its kennel and you go over and take it out of the kennel, you know, it's kind of like children. How many times does it take to give a kid a candy bar in a grocery store before you have a problem? You know, just one time. So if it's happened that way, you know, for whatever reason, whatever the scenario was in the past, that kind of a thing, if that's what's happened, then what we're looking at is reshaping the behavior. So, you know, having that horse, you know, when they're in the stall, you can put in things, you know, like I said, just, you know, that's where they get their feed. It's where they go to water, you know, shut the door for 10 minutes while you're, you know, taking a load of manure out, you know, open it up, you know, before they even notice it's shut. You know, just start mixing up the patterns, and instead of becoming having a predictable pattern that when it changes it's disruptive, start mixing it up. So I think I described in one of the demos this last weekend in Canada that some folks, really nice folks, have horses, and I was working out of their facility for while they were gone for a month. And they said, now, you know, Karen, you need to know at feeding time our horses, you know, bang on the rail and they're just noisy and that's just how it is. And I said, well, what do you do? And they go, well, we hurry down there and, you know, throw their feed in the morning. So I just kind of went, oh, okay, well, that's nice. So here the horses were just like clockwork, first thing in the morning, banging on the rail, hitting their feet on the rail, bang, 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 bang. It was so noisy. I mean, you wanted it to be quiet. And they looked so distressed. And I just went down there and I said, wow, well, I guess we're going to, you know, let's clean some stalls and let's get our other chores done and let's do this. And they just stood there banging on the rails for so long. And finally, I just went, well, I guess I'll go up and, you know, have some coffee and breakfast. And the looks on their faces when I walked back up to the house, you should have seen them. They just looked like, wait a minute, this is our dinner bell. This is, you went breakfast time. And it wasn't until, you know, I could walk down there and they just stood there and they said, I walked down there, they start banging on the fence. I just walked around, just kind of messed around, walked back up to the house. I did that. And it wasn't forever. It was, you know, probably 3 or 4 times. And finally they said, maybe she's never going to feed us. And when the moment they quit banging on the panels, that's when right away I threw the feed. So something to think about is when a horse is distressed, like I said, in a if you pull into a place and they're in the trailer and they're distressed, they want to get out, they're by themselves, you know, fill in the blank, whatever the scenario is. If you rescue their emotions, you inadvertently reinforce the behavior. So I would just go in and start messing around and just bringing it in, you know, making it as interesting as possible, you know, take a horse away, bring it back, bring it around, you know. People think, this is what's so interesting, is people think, well, horse training is not until I'm, you know, have a leg on each side of the horse and, you know, I'm geared up and I'm going down the road. But shaping behavior is a full-time dynamic, and how I like to describe horsemanship is a very broad subject with lots of little studies underneath it. And, you know, shaping behavior at feeding time or separation or trailering or riding, you know, riding is one slice of this topic, this broad topic of horsemanship. So, you know, saying, okay, instead of me going for my ride today, I'm going to take what time that I do have, because I know time is a factor, you know, and this is why these kinds of things people tend not to spend time on, because, say, I only have a short amount of time in my day or week or whatever it is, and I'm going to, you know, be riding during that. And then these other things just kind of fall apart until it becomes a problem, which is kind of the scenario here. So take the time that you do have and just make it a little project. Just go down there. You can do it while you're doing chores, you know, down at the barn and just kind of messing around and doing different things. You know, just make it a fun little project and see what you can do to, you know, change the behavior. And when the horse is relaxed, they're in the stall, they're relaxed, even if it's their buddy around or whatever, that's when you open the stall and ask them to come out. You make that decision. And every time you do that under different conditions, you're going to reinforce a different behavior, a different emotion, and then the horse starts to create a positive association to being inside of the stall rather than the negative association. And then right now the horse thinks their happiness is outside of the stall. So It isn't about bringing them out and working them and, you know, making them sweat and that kind of stuff and then putting them back in the stall. You can actually take a calm horse and work them into a frenzy by doing that. So I would just go down and start fiddling around just in your natural course of your day and your chores and your routine, just with this new awareness, see if you can't get that to shift, get the horse's mind to shift about being, you know, having the door closed in the stall and see how it goes. And if it doesn't work, if it's a problem, don't worry about it. I've had plenty of horses come to clinics and they start off at the clinic being very upset or agitated for whatever reason. And we're able to, you know, work that all out. So, I mean, that's why you're coming to the clinic, is to help that horse, you know, gain new confidence and new thoughts and, you know, your ability to shape the behavior. So, you know, don't give it a worry. It'll all be fine. I've had plenty of those situations at clinics. But if you can, before you get there, just see if you can fiddle around and get that a little bit better before you come. That'd be great.
Well, thanks for that, Karen. Those are some great ideas for Pat to take out and try with her horse.
Okay.
No, I'm hearing a dog in the background. Is that your dog or is that a different dog?
Nope, not my dog.
Okay. If you have a dog with you, would you mind hitting *6 and mute out your phone? Thank you very much. Our next question, Karen, is called Resistant Around the Farm, and it actually reminds me of the barn sour questions that you've answered a few times before.
Okay.
Hi, Karen. I have a 12-year-old Paso Fino that I've trail ridden hundreds of miles and shown in local fun shows.
Mm-hmm.
He's a little fractious at times, but basically we get along well most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
But when I try to ride her around the farm, she gets so resistant, I can tell she's really not enjoying herself like she seems to on the trail.
Mm-hmm.
She fights me going forward, then doesn't want to stop, then doesn't want to go. It's just a battle, and all I wanted to do, for example, was just check the fence line. What can I do? Thanks, Carol.
And I'm sorry, Mark. Can you repeat that question? I do have a puppy in my midst that is deciding to chew on the noisiest toy. So can you repeat that, please?
Yes, I can do that. You're shaping puppy behavior during the teleseminar.
I am shaping puppy behavior as we speak.
Hi, Karen. I have a 12-year-old Paso that I've ridden hundreds of miles on the trail and show in local fun shows. She's a little fractious at times, but basically we get along well most of the time. But when I try to ride her around the farm, she gets so resistant, I can tell she really isn't enjoying herself like she seems to on the trail. She fights me going forward, then doesn't want to stop, then doesn't want to go. It's just a battle, and all I wanted to do, for example, was check the fence line. What can I do? Thanks, Carol.
So I guess I'm making an assumption in this scenario is when she's good, she's at a show inside of an arena doing, you know, whatever the performance is, or on the trail.
Yeah.
You know, probably the thing to think about, and, you know, I see this in different scenarios. People will say, well, the horse is fine on the trail but hates the arena, you know, different scenarios. So take what it is that you think the horse likes on the trail. Like, what would be the difference between a trail and, you know, I guess that's in a nutshell, take the trail and put it along the fence. You know, if you're checking fence, there's no difference. You know, so probably the only scenario is that the barn is so close that the horse is saying, you know, I want to be over there. So, you know, sometimes when people get out on a trail, the horse gets into that routine of saying, well, you know, here we go, we're going away from the barn, we've got so much time away from the barn, we turn around, we come back to the barn. You know, and usually when you're at a show, you're not anywhere near your own barn. But, you know, some horses do have their preferences to go back to their stalls, you know, even at a strange location. So the thing that I would do, again, making the right thing easy, the wrong thing difficult, is I would ride away from the barn. And you can go back to different scenarios, you know, like you said earlier, Mark, you know, that sounds like a, you know, similar scenario. You know, ride your horse over to where you want it to go, and then ask it, give it a cue to lower its head and eat grass. And if it wants to come back to the barn, go back to the barn and then, you know, ride around the barn, ride around the barn, ride around the barn, you know, until that horse is, you know, breathing heavy, and then ride it away from the barn and ask it to eat grass. Again, kind of taking your goal and setting it, you know, not eliminating it, but just setting it aside for a moment and saying, can I make this a little game to change the horse's mind about where I want it to go? So something to think about when horses start fighting us. Usually it's because they want something that other than what it is that we're asking them to do. So make sure that when the horse starts to go, that again, you reduce or release the pressure when the horse goes. Sometimes we don't realize it. We don't have that awareness. You know, take trailer loading. You know, the closer a horse gets to the trailer, the more intense we become in our pressure, thinking we've got to have the momentum, you know, to get that rascal in that, you know, big metal box. You know, and sometimes that can be what's going on in this scenario. So I'd say that the pressure doesn't release until the, you know, you're over by the fence. So sometimes what happens with a horse is that, you know, you get closer to the fence and you're getting the intensity. You don't realize it, but your intensity or your pressure is kind of increasing, thinking, I need to get over to the fence. So just kind of develop that self-awareness that, you know, just check yourself, do a self-check. The closer my horse gets to the fence, is my energy up or is it relaxing and down? Am I making my goal more pleasurable to the horse, or is it becoming more uncomfortable or unpleasant to the horse? So sometimes we just don't even realize that, you know, that's what we're doing. But the horse behavior always reflects that. And what's interesting with horses, and I'm thinking of a horse that I rode in a clinic, and the gal was, you know, very nervous about getting on the horse. And I said, you know, I'm happy to teach, you know, horseback. I'll sit on your horse. And that horse wanted to go back to the gate and over to the barn. And that horse probably turned towards the barn, I don't know, 400 times. Basically, I taught the entire afternoon of the clinic with his horse kind of spinning, wanting to spin underneath me. And so every time the horse turned to where it wanted to go, it ran into pressure. When it just began to look back to where I needed it to go, there was a reduction or even a total release of the pressure. And the horse was so convinced, you know, and it had been ridden with so many gadgets and so much gear that, you know, the horse had been forced to go in the direction, you know, that the person wanted all the time. But once we were allowing the horse to make the decision, you know, that horse was free. He was like, oh, you got nothing now, sister. It's like, I'm turning towards the barn. I'm turning towards the barn. I'm turning towards the barn. I was like, that's great. You just keep turning and I keep responding. Release when you get there. And it was really amazing when that horse turned loose and said, you know what, I think I want to go this other way because that's where my comfort is. Then you win the mind and heart of the horse. I wasn't going to get into a fight with this horse. Once you get into a fight with a horse, it's like, you know, getting into a fight with a, you know, toddler. You know, mommy needs to take a time out because your emotions come up, the frustration comes up, and then, you know, you don't have much of a chance to have, you know, a positive, you know, a lasting positive effect in the situation. So kind of just, you know, keep your thoughts about you, make it an interesting challenge for you and the horse, and just go, you know, hey, it only took, you know, 42 times today instead of the 87 times yesterday, you know, and just go out there and fiddle around with it, kind of do and make a little project like every day for a week, you know, see what you get, see if you can get it just a little bit better, you know, chip away at it each day. And it doesn't take long, you know, if you're effective and your timing and your release and things like that, it really doesn't take very long to change the horse's mind. And when you learn how to change a horse's mind about you or what's being asked of it, then you win their heart. you know, then you win their trust. You know, then you and the horse both have more confidence in your communication. So, you know, hopefully that gives you some ideas and some thoughts on that, because, you know, we just don't always consider those things. You know, we think it's such a simple thing to go over and check the fence. You know, why are you giving me such a hard time? It's a really easy place to get into an argument with a horse, because it just seems like such a silly little thing you're asking it to do, and it's easy to get frustrated in those kinds of scenarios. So, you know, instead of going on your trail ride, you know, like I said in the other questions, going, you know, I'm not going to trail ride here for, you know, a week, 10 days, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, you know, whatever it takes. I'm gonna go out there and take that time on this little project, you know, and see if I can't find a way for this horse to, you know, think that checking the fence is, you know, is a good thing to do with me. So, you know, something to think about and consider. And as always, let me know how it goes for you.
Well, thanks a lot, Karen. That's some more great ideas. And as a reminder to everyone, you record all these teleseminars and then put them up on your website with a topic. And if you come up with a question, just go to the website, look through there, and see if Karen has some answers for your questions, and get some ideas that way. You don't have to wait for the next teleseminar. You can get help anytime you want it right there on the website.
Yeah. How many years have we been doing this, Mark?
Probably 4 years.
Yeah,
so
we're in our fourth year. 12 times a year. So a lot of really great questions from folks, and the questions are listed there, so you can, you know, see the questions, you know, and click on the teleseminar you want to listen to.
Okay, we have one more question. We'd like to go ahead and get this in.
Okay.
Before our time is up tonight. It's called A Good Start for a Beginning Rider. I have a question about helping my friend. She is a beginning rider and just purchased a very nice horse that's recommended for a beginner. He's a 13-year-old Paso gelding. She wants to get a really good start with him. I have your four-set DVD series starting with Riding from the Ground to lend her, but wanted to ask your opinion about how best to make this a positive and safe experience for my friend and her horse. Thank you for sharing your passion with us, Carol.
There's a DVD prior to that one called Cornerstone for Communication. And that's where it starts. Start by watching that. And what I would suggest for anybody, a beginner or experienced writer, anything, is to watch the DVDs and, you know, watch the whole series. You know, watch everything. You know, watch it all the way through. So sometimes what people want to do is they, you know, watch one little segment, we get so excited, we, you know, we want to jump out there and do it, you know, which is great, except I find it so valuable for people when they see the whole thing and then what you're doing in those very beginning, you see where it's going to take you. You know, you get the big picture. And also the Inspiration DVD, it's a little 10-minute DVD that's just me doing some fun things with horses, explaining kind of the bigger concepts about horsemanship from my perspective in my program. You know, watching that really gives people this spark and this idea of, you know, what's possible with horses. That's when people watch it, they get excited and they go, gosh, you know, do you even dare imagine yourself being able to do some of the things you're seeing me do with the horses? And that's what I'd really recommend, is to have that person, you know, just be embark on that journey of knowledge, and allow them to just go out and enjoy themselves with the horse. So a lot of times when people are beginners, and everybody's been a beginner at some point, even if you were, you know, 3 years old at the time, it's very easy to get bombarded with information. And everybody knows in the horse industry, you know, I point people out, you know, I ask, you know, who's has owned horses for less than a year, you know, and people raise their hand and I say, you know, welcome to the weird and wacky world of horses, because I mean, it's crazy. You get so many opinions, you get so many, you know, beliefs and experiences, and, you know, and you get people are just, you know, sure that my way is the right way, and if you do it that other thing, you know, you're going to ruin your horse. You know, there's all kinds of, you know, craziness that goes along. But if you just encourage that person to, number one, have fun. This is what I always, you know, tell people getting into horses. You know, whether you're just getting in or you've had horses, you know, get back to the fun. You know, keep it fun. You know, I'm at an age where if it's not fun, I'm not doing it. You know, I'm just not going to do it anymore. The other aspect of it is trust yourself. You know, trust your gut. If your gut tells you to not do something, then just don't do it. You know, even if people are around you going, oh, you'll be all right, oh, you're good, you know, just go, you know what, I don't feel comfortable with that right now. Be sure to speak up. Learn to speak up for yourself. You know, make those decisions for yourself. And, you know, and then just have fun. You know, watch the DVDs, you know, watch through the whole thing, you know, watch them together with her and just go, you know, but try not to get too involved to where the person feels like they get uncomfortable. They're like, oh, I think I'm going to do it wrong. Because the biggest thing I try to tell people is, you know what, you're going to do it wrong. You're going to, and it's not right or wrong. It's just, can you be more effective? You know, is there a way to be more effective? Absolutely. Absolutely. Myself included. There's always room for improvement. But getting comfortable and just going out and trying. Just going out and messing around with the horse. Just going and having that interaction. Just getting, you know, horse dirt on you, you know. That's what this is all about. To just, you know, reflect on the horse and just, you know, observe the horse. You know, they're such amazing creatures. And sometimes we can get out there with too many rules and too many, you know, programs and this kind of thing, and we forget to have fun. We forget to just think for ourselves and just, you know, keep, you know, reflecting on the sheer enjoyment that we, you know, got into horses in the first place. So, you know, that's probably my best advice, not only for somebody just getting into horses, but, you know, we can take that advice for, you know, those of us that have had horses for years and years and years. And, yeah, just, you know, let me know how it goes. I mean, that's why I designed the program the way I did, is just to take people from kind of foundation, build on that, you know, to advance, to being able to shape behavior and specific problems, or just to go have a more enjoyable trail ride just because you feel more confident in knowing how horses think, how they behave, and, you know, how to shape that behavior. It sounds like your friend's on a really great start, and, you know, it's just important to just, you know, keep it fun. You know, watch the entire series so you know where it's going to. And I encourage people to watch them more than once. You know, watch them multiple times. Just, and then watch it where you have the sound off and you're just getting the visual. And then also listen to it without watching it. And that's what I call, you know, layered learning. You're going to pick up a different piece of it each time, you know, especially watching it without the sounds. You know, I told some folks that at the booth this weekend, and their face is always like, why would I watch it without the sound? I said, because then you'll see what my hands are doing, you know. And that's another thing I encourage people to do when you're watching somebody that's highly skilled with horses. Watch them. Watch what their hands are doing. Watch what their seat's doing. Watch what their legs are doing. Really, you know, train your eyes to be observant about what the person is doing in their physiology. So, you know, so many times, you know, we love horses so much, our eyes are just filled with this, you know, beautiful animal. And then it's doing something really amazing, and then, you know, and then it's over, and we think, well, how'd they do that? You know, well, they did it right in front of you, but, you know, we're watching the horse rather than, you know, what that person is doing. So when you watch the DVDs with the sound off, that's what you'll have a tendency to do.
Well, those are all our questions for this evening. Do you have anything you want to say before we end it for the evening?
You know, I'd really like to thank the folks at the Canadian Outdoor Horse Expo for having me. The other presenters were terrific as well. Craig Cameron was there, Jane Savoy was there, lots of folks and lots of different subjects. If you don't have a horse expo in your area, you know, go online and look at them. You know, it's you know, just like people flying in for my clinics, you know, consider flying to a horse expo and getting the exposure to all different kinds of, you know, products, services, education, you know, health aspect of horses. There's so much to learn about horses, and the Horse Expo is a really a great place where so many experts are gathered in one area. You know, you can spend, you know, several days over the weekend, you know, to get a huge dose. I'm always amazed, you know, when I unload my briefcase when I got home, I have this huge pile of papers and materials, and, you know, you just never know what you're going to see. So really encourage people to do that. But I really appreciate the folks up in Canada. I always, you know, enjoy myself and look forward to going back again and again.
That's great. As always, Karen, thanks again for spending an hour answering questions as you do every month. We encourage everyone to please send in your questions or go onto the website, as we mentioned earlier, and look up perhaps some answers to questions that have, Karen has already addressed. So thanks again, everyone, for joining us tonight, and we look forward to speaking with you again next month.
All right. Thank you so much, everybody.
Good night.
Have a good evening. Bye-bye.